Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. For many, the longer, warmer days of spring offer a chance to renew our connection with the outdoor world and take up activities we've put aside for the winter. And nothing says communing with nature like Walden Pond. About 500,000 people visit Walden Pond State Reservation annually. Many come because of Henry David Thoreau's book, Walden, which remains at least as popular as it was 150 years ago. But why? Why does Thoreau continue to resonate with readers, and how did a pond that Thoreau himself admitted was ordinary inspire such extraordinary writing? Robert Thorson's Guide to Walden Pond connects the dots between the book and the place. Thorson is a professor at the University of Connecticut and a longtime tour guide for Thoreau's Concord. We spoke with him last spring, shortly after the guide was first published. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
And I understand you go by Thor?
I go by Thor, yes. Short for Thorson.
All right. So why write a guide to Walden Pond? I mean, this seems like it could be a slightly fraught thing to try to follow up Thoreau himself.
Well, the answer is because my wife suggested it. Well, stepping back. She knows me pretty well. Stepping back, I was preparing a handout or a pamphlet for teachers. The National Endowment for the Humanities funds a series of teachers' workshop, and I was on the guest faculty there. And it's a competitive process where you apply to come and tour the pond and all of that, you know, with a guest faculty. And I was that was my gig for the day. And I thought, well, what about all the teachers that applied and didn't come? So I started organizing my student pamphlet that I've been using for years and put it on the web. And she said, well, why not write a guide? And, of course, I did. And then there was interest. And I was absolutely stunned to believe that that there wasn't one. And so I just, in a rush, started writing one. And it was fun.
Your guide goes through 15 different points around the pond. Do you have a favorite that you could tell us about?
I'm reluctant to say I have a favorite.
Is that like choosing among your children?
It's like choosing your children. I think that for me, and I really came to mind when I was working on it, is that this is a narrative journey, you know, and it goes back in time to Thoreau's world, and then it rounds the south end of the pond and comes back to our modern world again. And to leave out a stop is like leaving out a link in a ladder.
Thoreau really only lived on the pond for a little over 2 years.
Yes.
I personally find that pretty amazing that in such a short period of time, relatively speaking, he was able somehow to so thoroughly and enduringly capture the essence of that place.
I really think he did. Every time I read Walden, I'm just very taken with how much he captures the sense of place. And his experience was about what I call the Western Basin. And the Western Basin is one of three, and it's the largest, and it's the deepest, and it's the most symmetrical, and it's actually shaped like a star. And so I think that the sense of symmetry that he noticed every single day was gradually absorbed into his mindset. And I think his whole argument about holism and simplicity and clarity go together perfectly well right there at what I call the waterfront.
I'm talking with Robert Thorson. He's author of a newly released Guide to Walden Pond. We tend to think of Thoreau as a naturalist, but you point out that he actually came to science rather late and was in large part inspired by Darwin, which I had never realized before. What happened there? What was it about Darwin's writing, and how did it change what Thoreau was doing?
Others would say Darwin has less influence. I think he has more influence. If you read Walden or if you read the journal, you will find phrases that sound like they come from Voyage of the Beagle. If you go to June 11th in his journal, 1851, he starts going on and on about Darwin, and it changes. And in an earlier book, Walden's Shore, I traced the scholarship on this, and I followed up every point that I could. And my sense is that Thoreau is found a new intellectual model, with Ralph Waldo Emerson representing a more immature, more idealistic, more literary flavor. But they, of course, had their troubles, you know, mentor and mentoree, and Thoreau was being emancipated. And I think when he stumbled into Voyage of the Beagle, not The Origin of Species, but The Voyage of the Beagle, that he found a new role model that he tried on for the next year. And the interesting thing there is that Thoreau is going to be the opposite of Darwin. Darwin is going around the world, you know, and Thoreau would argue being a great scientist, but he's dissipating himself by being in so many different places. Instead, Thoreau emphatically says, I'm going to stay home. I'm going to be in Concord. Let one person travel the world. Let another person stay here and really get to know a sense of place. And I think that coming to natural science, more than just botany, you know, but coming to natural science, the totality of it, not completely, but largely through the works of Charles Darwin's Voyage of the Beagle, really helped move him along.
Well, you mentioned that it wasn't just biology or forest ecology, that once he decided he was going to get to know this one place, he dug into the geology, the meteorology, the whole breadth of it. And you write that he actually figured out the glacial origin of Walden and of Kettle Ponds in general, which I hadn't realized. But then he doesn't necessarily trumpet that, right? He kind of skirts the issue in his writing and doesn't necessarily lay out that whole science that he's uncovered.
His first book, you know, A Week on the Concord and Merrimack Rivers, was a complete failure in terms of a commercial entity. He just failed, and he went broke, and he owed money for it. He self-published it, and he really, really got burned on that. And I don't think he wanted to do that again. And then he's got Walden, and he's working on Walden, and he's about to publish it. And the controversy over the glacial theory was so serious going on right about when he's publishing Walden that I believe, and it's an interpretation, not a fact, but I've read so many sort of allegories and analogies and metaphors and dates and in Walden that refer to the glacial theory and the origin of the pond and the controversy that's taking place there. But he doesn't want to mention it outright because then he's drawn into the argument between the hard physical sciences at that point where they're really having a serious argument. And I don't think he wants any of that argument. But if you go to his journal, and I believe it's on February 4th, 1852, if you go to that journal, he says it looks like the glacier, accumulated snows, you know, sort of advanced southward, you know, and buried all of Concord and whatever. You know, it's just totally clear that he knows that a glacier can exist and move in. In fact, he's quoting a glacier scientist in Walden, but it's principally for the pure color of water. When he talks about the god Thaw, T-H-A-W, he makes a joke out of it, but he's really talking about god Thaw, you know, melting out the pond. When he talks about the original proprietor and first settler who stoned the pond, he's referring, you know, to the glacier without saying so. When he talks about the ruddy and lusty old dame whose genius of fertility knows no bounds, he's talking about the re-vegetation and re-ecologization of the pond afterwards. In other words, the power of Mother Nature following the origin of the entity that created the pond. I think he's all over the glacial theory and skirted it. Now, that's an interpretation.
My guest is Robert Thorson. He's author of The Guide to Walden Pond, a new walking guide that connects Walden the book with Walden the place. What do you think Thoreau would think of Walden Pond today and the thousands of people who come to visit it in part because of him?
Well, I think he would think that they're making a big fuss over nothing, that everyone should live their own life and not emulate, you know, leaders. But I would go there because I think Thoreau is a leader that is worthy of listening to. But what would he think? First of all, I think he'd be horrified to see that his house site is monumented with cut granite stone, which he called hammered stone. And he saw that as an affront to income inequality in his own day. So I think, and what would he think of the larger pond? He would not even recognize the eastern shore. It is basically full of imported sand. It's imported glacial sand brought in because every single year it leaks into the pond and makes the pond smaller. I think it's a tough thing. I think the DCR, the Department of Conservation and Recreation, is doing a decent thing. You know, they're trying to balance two conflicting needs. One is recreation, and one is conservation. And it's in the name of their agency, the Department of Conservation and Recreation. And those sometimes are at odds, and they are in Walden. If you want to see recreation, go to the eastern shore of the pond. If you want to see conservation, you know, go to the northwest corner of it in the vicinity where Thoreau lived, and I think that you'll see woodland trails, you know, wandering around where Thoreau used to hang out.
That's Robert Thorson. He is a professor of geology, anthropology, and ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of Connecticut and the author of The Guide to Walden Pond. Thor, thanks so much.
You're very welcome. It's been a pleasure.
And that's our show. Join us next week as we explore the neuroscience of addiction from the perspective of someone who has both studied it and lived it. Judy Grizel has been sober for 30 years and a researcher in search of a cure for 25.
I think that a cure is maybe unlikely. Others might disagree with me, so I think this is an empirical question, which is one great thing about science.
Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Heather Goldstone.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.